up. Not loud, not proud, just hard.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. Imagine for a second that you come home from work and there is just an uninvited roommate sitting on your couch.
Oh, the absolute worst.
Right. And this person, they don't pay rent, they don't have a job, they never clean up. They just sit there, occasionally eating your food, completely rent-free.
A total freeloader.
Exactly. Now imagine finding out that this exact same freeloader hasn't just infiltrated your house. They somehow have a key to almost everyone's apartment in your entire city.
Wow.
Yeah, in fact, they have a key to almost everyone's apartment in the entire industrialized world. It sounds like, I mean, some impossible science fiction scenario, right?
It really does, yeah.
Well, there is a staggering hidden reality happening inside your own body right now that is exactly like this. We are talking about a microscopic freeloader, a tiny mysterious loop of genetic code that is secretly dominating the human gut. And it's so incredibly successful that it makes up over 0.1% of all gut metagenomic DNA.
Which is a massive amount.
Right. That's all the collective genetic material floating around in the microbes of your digestive tract. To put that sheer scale in perspective, it outnumbers the most famous gut virus we know of, crassphage, by 14 to 1. So, you know, what really happens when a completely mysterious piece of DNA hijacks your gut bacteria? And how could this hidden stowaway completely change how we track human disease and environmental pollution?
It is an absolute biological mystery, right?
Yeah.
And scientists have finally started pulling back the curtain on this hidden genetic element. So today we celebrate the work of Fogarty, Comstock, Aaron, and their massive collaborative team at the University of Chicago and beyond, who have really advanced our understanding of cryptic plasmids in the human gut. The sheer scale and depth of what they've uncovered. Well, it's forcing us to entirely rethink the invisible microbial ecosystems that live inside of us.
Okay, but before we get into the wild statistics of this specific freeloader, we need to establish some ground rules about how bacterial DNA works. Because normally, when I think of DNA in a bacterium, I just picture the main chromosome, you know?
Yeah, the big primary instruction manual for the cell that tells it how to function.
Exactly. But this deep dive is about plasmids, which operate completely differently, right?
Right, correct. So the main chromosome is the central blueprint. Plasmids, on the other hand, are extrachromosomal DNA elements. You can think of them as independent little rings of DNA that replicate autonomously. They are completely separate from the host bacteria's main chromosome.
Oh, okay.
And in the bacterial world, plasmids are famous for giving bacteria what we might loosely call a superpower. They often carry functional genes that confer massive evolutionary advantages. I mean, this could be heavy metal resistance or specialized metabolic functions to digest new foods, or most famously, antibiotic resistance.
Wow, so when a bacterium suddenly finds itself swimming in a deadly antibiotic, a plasmid carrying resistance genes becomes the ultimate survival tool.
Exactly.
Right, it's like downloading a software patch that makes you immune to a deadly computer virus. It makes total logical sense why a bacterium would spend its own cellular energy keeping that plasmid around and copying it.
Sure.
But the researchers in this study aren't looking at those helpful, superpower-granting plasmids. They're looking at something called a cryptic plasmid.
Yes, and cryptic plasmids are the ultimate rule breakers of the microbial world. They are plasmids that carry no obvious beneficial genes whatsoever. Like, none. They don't offer antibiotic resistance. They lack any virulence factors that might help a bacteria invade a host. They just appear to lack any measurable phenotypes or selectable markers at all.
So they basically do nothing.
Pretty much. For decades, microbiologists have essentially viewed them as selfish genetic parasites. They use the bacteria's cellular machinery to replicate, which drains the host's energy, but they don't seem to offer a single thing in return.
Which brings us to the actual star of today's deep dive, a highly specific cryptic plasmid named PBI-143. And this thing was first discovered way back in 1985 in a very common gut bacterium called Bacteroides fragilis.
Right, and when you look at its genetic blueprint, it is shockingly minimal.
Yeah, it's only 2,747 base pairs long. To give you an idea of how small that is, it only has two annotated genes. One is called MABA, which helps it mobilize or move around, and the other is called RePA, which simply helps it replicate. It's basically a two-room tiny house of DNA, Just a bedroom to copy itself and a hallway to move next door.
That is a perfect analogy.
But wait, I'm stuck on the math here. You're saying evolution is normally ruthless about efficiency. If this tiny house of DNA costs energy to maintain but gives the bacteria absolutely zero superpowers, shouldn't natural selection have wiped PBI 143 out millions of years ago?
You would think so.
Yeah.
And that exact contradiction is one of the most famous evolutionary puzzles in microbiology. It's known as the plasmid paradox. In theory, plasmids like PBI-143 just shouldn't exist over long periods of evolutionary time. The energetic cost of maintaining this tiny house of DNA should quickly outweigh its uselessness.
Right, the host bacteria should simply kick it out to conserve resources.
Exactly. And even if a plasmid did happen to have a beneficial trait, the host's main chromosome would eventually just absorb that useful gene directly to save energy and then discard the rest of the plasmid. So the fact that bacteria continue to spend precious energy maintaining these seemingly costly parasites, well, it's a massive paradox that scientists have struggled to explain.
Okay, so to solve a paradox that big, you clearly can't just look at a few isolated petri dishes in a university lab. You have to go global. And the methodology this team used to track this tiny loop of DNA is staggering.
It truly is a triumph of modern bioinformatics. They utilized a technique called shotgun metagenomics. So instead of trying to isolate and grow one single organism in a lab, which is often impossible for gut bacteria anyway, you take a whole environmental sample.
Like a scoop of dirt or something.
Yeah, exactly. This could be a scoop of soil, a vial of ocean water, or a sample from a human gut. You extract all the DNA present from all the thousands of different microbes, shatter it all into millions of tiny fragments, sequence those fragments, and then use massive computational power to piece the puzzle back together.
By looking for overlapping edges, basically.
Right. And the team scanned over 100,000 of these metagenomes from all over the world. They looked at human guts, human skin, the oral cavity, oceans, soil, sewage, and even the digestive tracts of various animals.
Well, okay, help me understand the logistics of that, though. How do you track a specific 2,747 base pair loop in an ocean of global biological noise? It feels like trying to find a specific grain of sand on a beach, but the beach is the size of a continent.
Oh, it requires immense computational sophistication. They relied on advanced de novo plasmid prediction algorithms to identify and reconstruct these circular sequences from all that background noise. But you see, they didn't stop at just finding the raw sequence of DNA letters. They used AlphaFold2, the AI system that predicts complex protein structures, to model the exact physical three-dimensional structure of the proteins PBI-143 creates.
Specifically the MABA dimer, right, the one that handles mobilization.
Exactly.
I want to pause there because whenever I hear AI protein folding, it sounds impressive, but why was structural data actually necessary here? If they already had the DNA sequence, why did they need to know what the protein looked like in 3D space?
Because DNA sequences naturally mutate over time, especially across different global populations. If you only look at the genetic code, it can just look like random noise.
Mm.
But protein shape dictates function. So by using AlphaFold2 to fold the protein in 3D space, the researchers can map the single nucleotide variants.
The individual genetic mutations.
Right, they map them directly onto the physical surface of the protein model. And this revealed exactly which parts of the protein could safely mutate without breaking it, and which structural parts were absolutely rigid and essential for the plasmid survival.
Oh, wow. So it allowed them to track how this tiny plasmid evolves while perfectly preserving its core function across human populations?
Exactly. It's brilliant.
But, I mean, the computer modeling just proves it's mutating and surviving globally. Bioinformatics is just theory. To actually prove this plasmid is a selfish parasite and not some hidden superhero, you'd have to put it to the test in a living, breathing ecosystem, right?
Yes, and this is where they did a wild physical experiment using notobiotic mice. These are mice born and raised in completely sterile environments.
Meaning they have absolutely zero bacteria in their bodies until researchers carefully introduce them.
Right, so they set up a direct competition.
Yeah, when I first read this, in my head I pictured this as a microscopic gladiator match inside the mouse gut. Like the bacteria with the plasmid and the bacteria without the plasmid were physically fighting each other for dominance. But biologically, that's not right, is it?
No, it's not a physical fight at all. It is much better understood as a metabolic marathon. The environment of a mouse gut is essentially a race for resources.
Mm-hmm.
The bacteria are competing to consume nutrients, metabolize them, and divide to create the next generation as fast as possible.
And the bacteria carrying the PBI-143 plasmid are running that exact same marathon, but they're carrying a heavy backpack.
Exactly. Every time the cell divides, it doesn't just have to copy its own massive chromosome. It also has to spend energy and chemical resources copying the plasmid.
And before we find out who wins that marathon, we have to talk about the sheer prevalence of this thing in the real world. In industrialized countries, they detected this exact cryptic plasmid in up to 92% of individuals. Almost everyone walking down the street is carrying this microscopic freeloader.
Yes, it's staggering. And what's equally fascinating is its extreme specificity. Despite checking all those 100,000 diverse environments we talked about, PBI-143 is incredibly specific to the human gut.
Like it completely ignores other human body sites.
Right. You won't find it thriving on your skin or in your saliva. And it barely registers in the animal kingdom either. When they looked at metagenomes from cats, PBI-143 made up only 0.003% of the genetic reads.
Wow.
In rats, it was 0.0001%. But in human guts, a massive 0.1% of all metagenomic DNA. It has found its absolute perfect ecological niche inside us.
So it loves the human gut. But here's the part that completely broke my brain. The monoclonality mystery.
Ah, yes.
If PBI-143 is everywhere and I am constantly exposed to thousands of different mutated versions of it through food, environment, and other people. Wait, let me rephrase. Why do I usually only have one specific version of PBI-143 in my gut at a time? I compared this in my notes to an exclusive via Key Club. Once the first version gets inside, it locks the door.
That's exactly what happens.
But how does a microscopic loop of DNA actually lock a physical door?
Well, it's a phenomenon ecologists call a priority effect. And the biological mechanics behind it are brilliant. When the first strain of PBI-143 colonizes a bacterial niche, it effectively excludes all latecomers through a process known as plasmid incompatibility.
Okay, so how does that work?
While the exact mechanics for PBI-143 are still being mapped, generally the first plasmid monopolizes the specific cellular machinery required for replication, or it produces localized repressor proteins. If a second, highly similar variant of the plasmid enters the cell, the machinery is already maxed out.
Or the repressor proteins block the new arrival from copying itself.
Exactly. The latecomer simply cannot replicate, and as the host cells divide, the new variant is quickly diluted out of existence.
Which leads to this beautifully bizarre reality about human inheritance. Because of this strict priority effect locking the door, the version of PBI-143 you carry is often inherited directly from your mother during the first days of your life. It's vertically transmitted and then maintained long-term, sometimes for your entire life.
It really is a remarkable hidden lineage.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this brings us back to the mouse marathon. In those germ-free mice running that metabolic race over a 40-day period, well, the bacteria without the plasmid won.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The researchers observed a gradual, steady decline in the ratio of bacteria carrying PBI-143 compared to the plasmid-free cells. The heavy backpack took its toll.
So this confirms the initial suspicion. PBI-143 is, by definition, a genetic parasite. It provides no obvious baseline advantage, and it measurably drags down the host's fitness.
Correct.
Okay, but if I'm playing devil's advocate here, this makes absolutely no sense. If it's a parasite that slows the bacteria down and evolutionary math is ruthless, why hasn't it gone extinct? Why is it universally successful in 92% of humans? There has to be a plot twist.
There is a major plot twist, and it was hiding in the sheer volume of those thousands of sequenced metagenomes. In the vast majority of people, PBI-143 exists in that minimal two-gene tiny house state. But in about 10 rare instances across the massive data set, the researchers caught PBI-143 red-handed carrying cargo.
It packed its bags. It actually stole extra DNA and incorporated it into its own loop.
Precisely. And the nature of that stolen cargo is what resolves the plasmid paradox. Sometimes, the cargo genes were toxin-antitoxin systems.
Okay, stop there. What is a toxin-antitoxin system? Because that sounds incredibly aggressive for a freeloader.
Oh, it is essentially a biological hostage situation. When a plasmid carries a toxin-antitoxin system, it forces the bacteria to produce two things: a stable, long-lasting toxin, and an unstable, fast-degrading antitoxin that neutralizes it.
So as long as the bacteria keeps the plasmid, it continuously produces both, and the cell is fine.
Exactly. But if the bacteria tries to kick the plasmid out to save energy, the production of both stops. The unstable antitoxin degrades almost immediately, but the stable toxin lingers. Without the endotoxin to hold it back, the lingering toxin kills the host cell.
That is deeply sinister. The plasmid essentially guarantees its own survival by threatening to destroy the host if it gets evicted.
It's not just a freeloader. It's a freeloader holding a dead man's switch, but it doesn't only pick up biological weapons.
Right, what else does it pick up?
In other instances, it had picked up actual metabolic genes from the host chromosome or from other mobile elements. This implies that PBI-143 isn't just a static parasite, it is a natural shuttle vector.
Meaning it occasionally picks up highly functional genes and transfers them between cells in the microbial community.
Yes, exactly.
So 99% of the time, it's just hanging out on the couch, costing the bacteria energy. But every once in a while, it grabs a tool butt, fixes the plumbing by offering a crucial metabolic gene, or installs a security system. It offers a transient, functional benefit that justifies its existence across the broader population over millions of years.
Right. It pays just enough rent, just infrequently enough, to keep from getting evicted globally.
That is so clever.
Ecologists call this discretionary parasitism, and it completely recontextualizes our understanding of the plasmid paradox. But the researchers didn't stop at understanding its evolution. They discovered that PBI-143 responds dramatically to physiological changes in its environment, which has massive implications for human health.
Oh yeah, this connects directly to inflammatory conditions that millions of people struggle with, right? Like inflammatory bowel disease, or IBD.
Yes. The researchers wanted to see how the plasmid behaves when the host bacteria is severely threatened. Bacteroides fragilis is an anaerobic bacterium, meaning oxygen is highly toxic to it. When researchers expose these bacteria to oxygen, creating severe oxidative stress, the PBI-143 plasmid reacted instantly. It rapidly began copying itself, multiplying its numbers inside the cell to extreme levels.
At first, when I read that, I thought the plasmid was panicking. Like, it senses the ship is sinking and it's frantically building lifeboats to try and save the bacteria, but it's not actually trying to save the host, is it?
Not at all. It is a purely selfish biological imperative. The plasmid senses that its host cell is dying from the oxidative stress. By multiplying frantically, the plasmid is ensuring that when the bacterial cell inevitably bursts and dies, there will be hundreds of copies of the plasmid released into the environment rather than just one or two.
It maximizes its chances of being absorbed by a different surviving bacterial cell nearby.
Exactly. It is abandoning ship.
Which is ruthless, but clinically this is a massive breakthrough. Because inflammatory bowel disease is characterized by intense inflammation and oxidative stress in the human gut.
Exactly. When the team analyzed thousands of human samples, they found a clear, undeniable pattern. The relative copy number of PBI-143 spiked significantly in patients diagnosed with IBD compared to healthy individuals.
Meaning we have a totally new, non-invasive health biomarker. Instead of subjecting a patient to a complex, invasive procedure to look for inflammation, we could potentially use PBI-143 as an unbiased way to measure the level of physiological stress in a human gut.
Right, simply by tracking its copy number.
If the freeloader is abandoning ship, we know the host is sick.
It is a highly promising clinical application. But the implications extend far beyond the health of a single individual. It brings us to environmental monitoring, specifically tracking human waste.
Right, and nobody likes to think about sewage. But monitoring environmental water systems for human fecal contamination is a massive global public health necessity to prevent outbreaks of disease.
It is essential. Currently, environmental scientists use specific genetic markers, like the HF183 and LACNO3 bacterial genes, to test if water has been contaminated by human sewage. But recall the numbers we discussed earlier. PBI-143 makes up 0.1% of all gut DNA, and it is virtually absent in cats, rats, and other animals.
So it's basically the loudest, most specific biological alarm bell you could possibly ask for.
Precisely. When the researchers tested wastewater and heavily polluted rivers, PBI-143 significantly outperformed the traditional markers. It detected human contamination at much lower levels of dilution and in environmental samples where the traditional HF183 markers completely failed to register.
Wow.
It is vastly superior for environmental monitoring simply because it is so incredibly numerous and specific to humans.
That alone justifies the entire study. But I couldn't stop thinking about the future of therapeutics. If this thing is already a natural shuttle vector, I mean, if it already knows how to completely sneak past the priority effect VIP bouncers, integrate perfectly into our gut bacteria, and stably exist in 92% of people without making us sick, could we pack it with our own engineered cargo?
You are describing the holy grail of microbiome engineering. If we want to deliver a therapeutic payload to the human gut, perhaps a gene that actively reduces intestinal inflammation, or an enzyme that helps a patient digest a specific nutrient they are intolerant to, getting that gene to survive and stabilize in the highly chaotic, competitive environment of the microbiome is incredibly difficult.
Right. Most engineered probiotics just get
flushed right out of the system.
Exactly.
But PBI-143 has spent millions of years solving that exact problem. It has evolved to be the ultimate, highly conserved delivery system. Hijacking this natural shuttle vector could completely revolutionize how we administer microbiome-based medicines.
We just take the uninvited roommate, hand them a broom, and finally put them to work.
Well said.
But as amazing as that sounds, we aren't quite there yet. What are the actual roadblocks before I can take a PBI-143 pill?
Well, we must be cautious and acknowledge the limitations. First, while the computational data strongly suggests PBI-143 acts as a shuttle vector, we still need physical laboratory experiments to prove exactly how those stolen cargo genes impact bacterial fitness in complex real-world environments.
Like, does carrying a metabolic gene actually make the bacteria more competitive in a human gut, or is it still a drag?
Right. And second, the in vivo mouse models we discussed only tested a single strain of PBI-143 inside a single species of bacteroids. The human microbiome contains thousands of interacting species, so we need to rigorously test how different sequence variants of this plasmid behave across diverse, fully realized microbial communities before we can safely use it as a therapeutic delivery system.
We need to move from reading the blueprint in the lab to actually test driving it on a busy biological highway.
Precisely. But the foundational reality uncovered by this study is undeniable. If we distill this entire journey down, PBI-143 is an ancient, cryptic genetic parasite that has silently and successfully colonized the industrialized human gut.
Yeah.
It utilizes a strict physical priority effect to establish lifelong maternal lineages within families. Yet, its hidden ability to act as a transient shuttle vector, trading genes to justify its existence, combined with its selfish, massive replication response to oxidative stress, transforms it from a mere biological curiosity into a profound new tool.
It holds the key to both ultra-sensitive environmental monitoring and potentially the next generation of human health therapeutics. Think about the invisible ecosystems inside you right now. You are a walking universe. If a supposedly useless microscopic parasite is actually keeping a historical record of your maternal ancestry, while simultaneously acting as a living alarm bell for your current bodily stress, wait, scratch that. If it's doing all of that, what does this mean for the future of medicine if we finally learn how to hijack the hijacker? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Crowded gut, the tiny ring keeps showing up. Not loud, not proud, just hard to miss. A hidden script in microbial bliss. It rides the line from host to host. A little passenger, a steady ghost. Holding tight, staying clean. One clear thread in the metagenome stream. Small circle, big signal in the dark. Lighting up a human mark. When the air turns sharp and mean, it copies up, it spikes unseen. Small circle, big signal. Don't let go, it tells you what you need to know. Most times it's one kind, one in the crowd. Pass down close, no need to shout. But it can move when the moment's right. Across new neighbors in the same midnight. Oxidative pressure, watch it rise. More copies when the system's stressed inside. A warning flare in a troubled tide. I made it key for